Before I get into the body of the sermon, I just want to tell you, as always, I love my job because I get to think of creative things that I might do in the service, and sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. But I found a video clip on simplicity that, before a minister speaks, might be painfully appropriate. I think it should be shown and should have been shown to me when I was in seminary and to other aspiring preachers, but unfortunately it wasn't. Now, the clip was from a website for a marketing company talking about the need for simplicity when you're delivering a message. But unfortunately, it didn't include any credits, and it's only recently posted, and nobody's can't find out where the clip came from. Somebody here might recognize it. I don't know the actors, although at least one of them seems very familiar. And I don't know the movie that it's from.
This day you fought with honor. This day you vanquished those that mean to smite us. The Dark Lord forged his enemies to wreak their terror, but we persevered and slayed them forthwith. In the years to come, they will sing our victory song as we sung for our forefathers.
Sorry. Sorry. Just one thing I thought I might bring up.
Whatever is it, brother of the watch, fellow kinsman,
yeah, this
honored knight of the third bed.
This is what I want to talk about. We are using way too many words, guys.
Not thou me, proud warrior of the north. Brave son of the armed.
There. That's what I... We really speed things up around here if we just cut down on the wordage.
How so, brother of the cloth? Defender of the notch.
Well, like in battle today, when you yelled... I'm paraphrasing, but... noble horn, raise thy shields... From yonder field of battle approaches, is it thy enemy's arrows? Yeah, next time, just yell duck. No, I mean, a lot of us died.
Not speak in such an elongated way for the sake of the time.
Exactly.
Some merit you may have in your words, my brother. I see how my verbose retelling may elongate the...
Don't think you do. Yeah, even this, the victory speech you're making, I don't know, I just think maybe just say we won or something.
Your words have resonated deep in my mind, my brother.
Again, I don't think I have.
Well, it's too late for me. I may not be able to shorten this sufficiently. So I'm taking the position this morning that simplicity is overrated. Sometimes we won will do, but sometimes you need a little more. I hope you enjoyed the order of service. I struggled over what I was going to put on the cover, and then I thought I came up with the perfect solution. I'm not here this morning trying to advance the hypothesis that simplicity is a bad thing, just that it's overrated. In fact, oversimplified, if you want me to say that. I think the purpose of the church and the purpose of religion has always been about how to lead a good life. For most of human history, what that has meant is conformance to rules that are passed down from generation to generation based on holy scriptures and based on tradition. This applies equally well for Judaism, Buddhism, Christianity, Confucianism, Islam. But in this Unitarian Universalist faith tradition, we still grapple with the challenge of living a good life. But our challenge is even greater. For we generally reject the idea that there is a simple formula in one sacred text that should guide all of humanity. We are each on an individual journey to decide how we will create meaning in the context of our own unique lives. It can be a compelling idea to think that if our lives were simpler, they could be more meaningful. And there are innumerable cliches about the benefits of a simple life. We're encouraged to edit our to-do lists, to downsize, to eliminate clutter, to reject status symbols, to disconnect from our technological dependencies, and so on, with the implication that by doing so, we'll make our lives more serene and more comfortable. But what is the goal of life? What does it mean to lead a good life? Is the goal of being comfortable and serene? Is that sufficient to give meaning to our life? This takes me back to that opening poem by Baron Wormser. We want a simple thing, a properly boiled egg. We don't want to have to think about all the complexity of making that boiled egg possible. The gas and gas wells, the pipelines, the banks, complexity of the metal pots and the mining and the smelting and the hard labor that went into it, even the source of water with its pumps and pipes and the mysteries of rainfall. Not to mention the complexities of a political system and a social structure that allows us to eat that egg without fear for our lives. We want to be oblivious about that complexity, as oblivious as the chicken who laid the egg is oblivious about the source of her meal, that bit of grain that seemingly came from nowhere, but has a story just as complex as the boiled egg. The goal of simplicity at its best is motivated by a desire to eliminate unnecessary things from our lives so that we may concentrate on the important things. But it's also often motivated by a less noble goal of disengaging from the messiness of life. That appeal to simplicity, to isolate ourselves from the messiness of life, is as strong today as ever. The beautiful song that we sang earlier and celebrated in our time for children of all ages, an old Shaker hymn written in 1848 by Joseph Brackett. It's a lovely melody and sweet words, but they conceal a social orientation that could be seen as problematic. The Shakers were a Christian sect where meaning in life was to be found in the imminent return of Jesus. So much so that they rejected marriage and any sexual relations as a distraction from the parousia, the return of Christ. "'Tis a gift to be simple, 'tis a gift to be free," wrote Brackett. Satisfaction was not attained through the acquisition of power or wealth. Instead, it was attained through humility and freedom from worldly goods. In fact, when true simplicity was achieved, people were not concerned by their poverty or their lack of power. The song proclaimed, "To bow and to bend, we shan't be ashamed." That's a reference to the fact that you may have overlords, you may have people over you who are more powerful than you are, but bowing and bending you won't be ashamed of because you're holding on to something more powerful, more truthful. And when we find ourselves in a place just right, we'll be in the valley of love and delight. That's a reference to the coming end of the world and the return of Jesus, which made your life pretty simple if you visualized that was going to happen within your lifetime. You could really focus your thoughts. Well, I hope I haven't ruined that hymn for you. But my logic in stating that simplicity is overrated is based on a belief that living a good life involves engaging in the world, not escaping from it. This engagement is admittedly difficult at times. But it is that force, it's that that forces us to grow and to expand our capacities. Our capacities for problem solving, our capacities for having compassion for others in the world. Several of the links in the article in that theme magazine this month reference the work by psychologist Roy Baumeister on the exercise of our willpower. And exercising willpower is becoming a theme of my sermons, you might have noticed. Because willpower is at the heart of religion for me. It's what makes us human. The cultivation of our will is central to giving our lives meaning. Baumeister postulates that our willpower is like a muscle, and that it fatigues if it's used excessively. The more decisions we're forced to make, for example, the more it will weaken. And he cites some interesting study that was done in Israel of parole board. And if you went up before the parole board in the morning, you had like a 70% chance of being granted parole. If you went up before the parole board late in the day, you had a 10% chance, even though the cases were essentially identical. People got tired of trying to make decisions. Judges got tired of trying to make decisions. And the simpler thing to do, the less stressful thing to do, was keep the person in prison. There was less risk. I want to get home for supper. Interesting, one of the standard tests, I never heard this before, but I take it from the text, that standard test that psychologists use to test willpower is to ask subjects to keep their hand in a bucket of ice water for as long as they can. Makes sense, because you're not really going to do any harm to yourself, but it gets quite painful after a while, and you want to withdraw your hand. So they would study people after grueling sessions of decision-making, and the length of time people were able to endure the cold water falls off dramatically. If you've been making decisions all day, your willpower is weakened. One conclusion from this work is that the central conclusion, by Baumeister apparently, is that we should ration our resources. We should avoid situations where we're required to make decisions unnecessarily. There's a quote in the article about both Barack Obama and the CEO of Facebook. His name is Zuckerberg, right. They both have a routine of dressing that they wear the same thing regularly. For the president, it was a gray or a blue suit. He didn't stress over what he was going to wear. And for Zuckerberg, it's a gray t-shirt. And they did it for the same reason. They didn't want to waste time trying to figure out, what am I going to wear today? Took that decision away and made their life simpler. His studies show that people with the best self-control are the ones who structure their lives so as to conserve their willpower, who don't schedule needless back-to-back meetings, and they establish habits that eliminate mental effort in making choices. But I think there's other important implications of this work related to the effects of poverty. If you have severely limited financial resources, you're forced to make difficult decisions all the time. Will you pay the rent? Will you feed the children? How will you stretch that budget to get to the end of the month? How do you keep the bill collectors away? This form of decision making can be particularly exhausting. And it uses up what reserves of willpower may exist. And that has negative consequences on subsequent decision-making. For those of us with the luxury of choice, the siren call of simplicity can also be problematic. I agree with that article that willpower is like a muscle that can fatigue, but I also believe it's like a muscle that we can strengthen through exercise. You can choose to make your life more pleasant by simplifying it, and avoiding contact with others who may challenge you in one way or another. And in this way, you'd be conserving your limited willpower. You make your life simple, you stay away from difficult situations, difficult people, you maybe move into a gated community. If you can choose to strategically and carefully engage with others who challenge you, in this way, you may be exercising that willpower muscle and increasing your capacity to engage with the world. Many of you know that for years I faithfully attended Al-Anon meetings with others who were dealing with, not with their own addictions, but with the effect of alcoholism within their families. And I remember one woman who described how she had tried to cope. She decided to simplify her life, and she gave up more and more of the things that she had been involved in. Eventually, she gave up her car, she gave up her house, she gave up her job. Her world became smaller and smaller, and instead of increasing her ability to cope, she found life harder and harder. The exercise of her willpower more and more difficult. So the message I'm trying to deliver is, I think we all need to resist that temptation to make our lives simple by avoiding engagements. There are so many issues in the world, and the biggest single issue in the world is how we relate to one another, how we relate to our neighbor. And often, relating to our neighbor can be difficult and can be a challenge. But if you close the door of your apartment, close the door of your house, live in a bubble, I think you're missing what it means to lead a good life. Now, when I'm talking about spirituality and simplicity, it's not all that simple. When I listened to the music this morning, that music during the meditation touched me in the way that many of the readings that I've selected and used in meditation didn't touch me. That music brought me to tears. What is it about that that we need in our lives? I know that many in this congregation need that spiritual aspect in their lives and struggle to find the best way to incorporate it into Sunday services. And it needs to be simple, and it needs to be direct. So I want to end this sermon by playing for you a brief piece of music, a little musical video, by a group called the Rend Collective. They're a Northern Irish Christian experimental folk rock worship band. They're extremely popular. They tour the world, and they attract that demographic that we seem to have difficulty attracting, younger people. But this is a piece of Christian worship music. But I think it captures that sense of spiritual simplicity that I was trying to describe and that we all crave at some level. So for some of you, the reference to, I'm going to play this in a minute, for some of you, the reference to Christian worship and to God may be too strong to allow the sentiment of simple spiritual release to penetrate your defenses. But I would ask you to do your best to give it a sympathetic hearing and to see if there isn't an appeal here to something within you, a universal desire for spiritual simplicity, a kind of simplicity that can be sustaining. And I'll let the music end the sermon.
Purity to worship you.